It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. More frequent and intense rainstorms and flooding, hotter, longer, and potentially more deadly summer heat waves. That's what we can expect in Pennsylvania, according to the third National Climate Assessment released earlier this week. Here to talk about the cause of this extreme weather and how it will impact residents of the Commonwealth is John Radzilowicz. He's Director of Professional Development, Asset STEM Education for Carnegie Mellon University. He joins us by phone. John Radzilowicz, thanks for being with us.
My pleasure, Paul.
This is not good news. In what other ways do you think that this is going to affect us?
Well, it certainly isn't good news, but it's not a surprise either. This follows on from the previous studies that have been done. Anyone who's been taking a look at the information that's been out there sees that this is just a more detailed report on what we've known for quite some time. What this is really all about is saying, look, we have to acknowledge that global warming is happening, and there are direct impacts. They have started to happen already. I think we can all say we have seen some of these changes that you've talked about, the heavier rainfalls, the longer heat waves. We've been experiencing those for years now, and we have to prepare for this and decide what are we going to do about it.
Is climate change becoming harder to deny?
Well, you know, you're always going to find the deniers, Paul. We've talked about this before, but I guess the good news is that there was a Gallup poll that came out at the end of March that said among Americans, for the first time, we're seeing a clear majority that says that they do believe that global warming is happening and that they will see effects within their lifetime. About 61% of Americans say that now. The problem is, and what this report really speaks to, is that in that same survey by Gallup, you see that only 34% of Americans say that this is a serious threat or concern for them. So what we need to do is we need to see that number get up into the 60s. You know, yes, acknowledge that it's happening, great, but we have to see that this is going to cause some problems, and that's why we do need to take action.
According to the report, climate changes are occurring, as you mentioned, in many parts of the United States. How is it impacting things like infrastructure? You know, when you talk about the 34% of people who do not necessarily acknowledge that this is a serious problem, in order to drive that point home, how is the climate change that we're seeing impacting ecosystems, infrastructure, public health, all of that?
Yeah, well, one of the most obvious, I think, and where you see most of the action taking place is along the coast. And that's because they're beginning to see the combination, especially in the Northeast, of the heavy rains and the rise in sea level that's occurring. We've had basically an 8-inch rise in the ocean so far. So they've got to take a look out. So, for example, you've got a city like New York that has already started a major project for redesigning pumps for the subway system, because they realize if they don't begin to do that now, pretty soon the subway system is going to be underwater. These are projects that are going to cost hundreds of millions of dollars. But that's the kind of stuff that has to happen now if we're looking at these end results, you know, down the line. If you take a look at the report, basically it says by the time we get to mid-century, so around 2050, you're going to see in the Northeast, so for example, in southern Pennsylvania, a climate that looks like Alabama instead of what we're used to seeing. So those kinds of changes are going to cause problems in terms of infrastructure, where we have to look at things like, well, okay, the water's rising, but it's also going to create problems in terms of what we see with insects and vegetation. So the kinds of insects and the kinds of plants that we see growing in Pennsylvania now is not what we're going to have in 2050. So instead, we're going to have the kinds of insects moving up from the south. This is going to have a direct effect on the kinds of things that can be grown. So if you take a look across the country, this is true in all cases, where farmers are going to have to be dealing with completely different situations in terms of pest control, in terms of the length of growing season. And this is a huge piece. I mean, people talk about, oh, well, okay, the subway floods, that's not such a big deal. Well, what about food production? That's a huge problem.
And coming up in our next segment, we're going to look more closely at how climate change is reducing the Commonwealth's animal population. Right now, we're talking with John Radzilowicz, Director of Professional Development, Asset STEM Education for Carnegie Mellon University. He is someone that we frequently engage in conversations about climate change and global warming. And to bring this closer to home, John, the Pittsburgh area is one of the worst in the nation when it comes to air quality. How will what we're seeing in these climate models exacerbate the problem of air quality in the Pittsburgh area?
Yeah, it will be a huge one for us. Anybody who's lived in the area, and really near any major cities, this is true too, but certainly people who've lived in the Pittsburgh area know that we get into the summer months, as the temperature increases, what we find is situations where the atmosphere holds those particles in place that are in the atmosphere, the pollutants that we're mainly concerned with. As a result of that, what ends up happening is the air quality becomes more poor during those very hot months in the summer. Well, if we're looking at a temperature rise across the board, what we're going to find is that at other times of the year, we're going to have those same thermal inversions that are going to hold things down.
And reportedly, Pennsylvania produces 1% of the world's greenhouse gas emissions and 4% of the U.S. total. So how much are we responsible now for global warming, and how can we change that, the way that we're living and these patterns of behavior that contribute to the problem of greenhouse gas emissions and global warming?
Absolutely. This is the one thing that I think most Pennsylvanians don't want to talk about, and that is the fact that we are a major factor in the United States' contribution to the problem, and the United States is one of the leading contributors to the problem in the world. So I hear people say all the time, well, you know, we don't want to do anything that's going to harm our business because, you know, we're not going to have China doing the same thing, or Europe isn't going to be as strict, or those kinds of things. Well, in fact, China and Europe have already started to make changes. We're the ones who are lagging behind. There are plenty of things that we can do in terms of restrictions on the amount of pollutants that are put out by corporations and how that material is actually processed. Is there a cost to that? To say, for example, reburning emissions, you know, those kinds of processes to need new equipment. Absolutely, there's a cost. But there's a greater cost if we don't do it. And this is really what the administration and they've really been saying, is beating this drum for some time. We need to get out in front of this, and we need to put some of those restrictions in place to make those things happen. The problem is, right now, we have not gotten the political will in Congress to make that happen. So even if the administration proposes restrictions, I'm really not seeing that we're going to see anything passed in the current Congress.
Well, I mean, is this a congressional issue, though, John, or is it something that Pennsylvania needs to make itself responsible for? For example, Pennsylvania has approved a climate action plan. The state did that back in December of 2009. Do you know what's been happening with that? Has it gone anywhere?
Yeah, no teeth, right? Absolutely no teeth. So you can put a plan in place and say, well, we'd like to see these numbers hit, and we'd like to see voluntary efforts on the part of the polluters. That's gotten us nowhere, Paul, and that's one of the problems. And that's part of the reason why I went right to the federal issue. There is even less political will in Pennsylvania in terms of passing those kinds of restrictions because, again, the argument that's made is, well, it's going to cause us to not be competitive in terms of the businesses that are here. So this is something, if it happens across the entire country, if it's done at the federal level, then we aren't to worry about one state being competitive with another. And I think you're more likely to get a solution there because, again, if you take a look at what's happening in the Pennsylvania legislature, sure, we can you know, put plans in place, but if no one is willing to pass any kind of a law to put teeth into any of that, I don't see how you make progress.
What are some sensible policies to reduce greenhouse gas emissions to stave off some of the more dramatic consequences of global warming and climate change over the next century?
Well, we talked about this a little bit last time, and I always get a chuckle out of people with this because they say they don't want to believe this is possible. But simple conservation efforts on everyone's part have clearly been shown mathematically to make a difference. So, being concerned about how far you actually drive, making sure that you've got your tires inflated. Everybody laughs at these things, but the reality is when you have millions of people doing that, you and I can make a difference just by doing those kinds of things. Walk instead of drive. Right? Take public transportation instead of using your car. But not the real numbers that are going to really shift this have to do with what we do in terms of mileage on vehicles and what we do in terms of energy production. So, for example, coal-fired plants producing electricity. That's where you're going to see the biggest change. And so what can we do there? That's really what I was referring to when I talked about things like reburning emissions, things like carbon sequestration. That's not something you or I can do. That's something we have to convince our legislators that we have to do as a nation. That's where you're going to see the biggest thing. So I really think everybody should do what they can in terms of their piece. But what you really need to do is have your voice heard in terms of these larger changes that have to happen across the country.
Well, and right. I mean, how hard is it to get people motivated individually to do things when you have a climate action plan in place and you're asking polluters and the businesses that are contributing to the ever-increasing greenhouse gas emissions to be responsible and do their part? You're not requiring them to do it. You're asking them to do it voluntarily, which is, at the end of the day, what we all have to do is to take the initiative. But how hard is it to convince individuals to do that when you're looking at these big businesses that won't take the initiative themselves?
No, absolutely. And that's where I go back to that Gallup poll. That's what scares me. You know, we could say, gee, we're really happy to see now we finally have a majority of Americans that say global warming is real. How many years has it taken us to get to that point because of the anti-science opposition that's been out there? The scientists have been sort of settled on this issue since the mid-90s. And here we are in 2014, finally with the public catching up to that. How many more years will it take for the public say, okay, this is enough of a threat for me to do something? So when I hear that only 34% see it's a threat, you know, the clock is running. You know, how much more time do we have before we reach a tipping point where some of the changes that we could make now to make a difference will no longer matter? And I think that's one of the things that this report really kind of points out. We have to start doing something now. We've wasted a lot of time. We don't have a lot of time left.
John Rodzilowicz is Director of Professional Development, Asset STEM Education for Carnegie Mellon University. John, as always, been a pleasure talking with you. Thanks for your time.
Thank you so much, Paul. You take care.
You too. Coming up, how climate change is reducing the Commonwealth's animal population. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. From tornadoes to flooding, weather events are intensifying and wreaking havoc on the country. What toll have these events taken on wildlife? I'm joined now by Ed Perry, Pennsylvania Outreach Coordinator for the National Wildlife Federation, to get his reaction to the National Wildlife Federation's new report entitled Wildlife Legacy: Climate Change and the Next Generation of Wildlife. Ed Perry, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Yep, thanks for having me.
The new National Wildlife Federation report released this week paints a bleak picture with respect to young wildlife species, including many found in Pennsylvania, and tells us climate change is the culprit. What do you think's at work here?
Well, the reason that this is happening is that our reliance on fossil fuels, coal, oil, and natural gas to cool and heat our homes and run our vehicles have put massive amounts of carbon pollution into the atmosphere. And this, in turn, has these greenhouse gases have caused the temperature to increase, thereby affecting all life on this planet.
Now, I mean, these fossil fuels, these forms of energy, the older forms of energy that we particularly have relied on here in Pittsburgh, I mean, they've been around for a while. I mean, this is going back to the 19th century. And, have we seen species dropping off over the years the way they are now? It has to be – isn't there more to it than that?
You know, when I first started working on this, I told people – and this was in 2007 – I wouldn't live long enough to see the effects of climate change. Boy, was I wrong about that. In 2005, I'm floating the Susquehanna River with my two sons, and at that time, it was the hottest year in record. We've been doing this float for 25 years, and that water temperature above Harrisburg was 91 degrees, and that weekend, we saw hundreds and hundreds of bass floating downstream, killed by a common soil and water bacteria called columnaris. And now...
And then this would be a bacteria that only thrives in the warmer weather?
No. What happens is that bacteria's always been in the river. And But what's happened is the flows are lower because our rainfall patterns are changing in the summer. We're going into these mini droughts. The temperature's going up. So now every year when you have that lethal combination of low flow and high temperature, we have a smallmouth bass kill to the point that 100 miles of the river, the fishery has collapsed in 100 miles of the middle Susquehanna River, such that the Fish and Boat Commission has asked the Department of Environmental Protection to declare that section of the river impaired.
We had been hearing, and we've talked about it before on the show, that some of the rivers here in the Pittsburgh area, western Pennsylvania, were really bad 40 years ago in the early 70s before the whole environmental movement really began to gain some traction. But what we've been hearing is that these rivers have been coming back. What you're saying is you found evidence to the contrary.
Well, the irony is that under the Clean Water Act, we've really cleaned up the amount of pollution pouring into our rivers. But now climate change threatens to undo all of that because it's basically changing the ecological systems of these rivers to the point that these species no longer thrive under those conditions. You see, hot water holds less dissolved oxygen. And at these high water temperatures, the fish are stressed. It doesn't kill them directly, but stresses them to the point that common soil and water bacteria can act on them and cause these fish kills.
So what's been the impact on the bass, the big fish here in western Pennsylvania?
Well, you now have bass tournaments in Pittsburgh, but for the first time, this columnaris disease is showing up in the Allegheny River. It's in the Delaware now. It's in a lot of streams where this organism really hadn't had much of an effect on the fishery. But it's not just bass that are being affected. Wildlife, we're in danger of losing our state fish, the brook trout, the state tree, the hemlock, and our state bird, the ruffed grouse, due to these increased temperatures. Trout used to be called hemlock bass or hemlock trout because they were so closely associated with hemlocks. But now because of that hemlock woolly adelgid killing off hemlocks all across the state, these hemlocks were an important part of the habitat for brook trout because they kept these streams warm when air temperatures were elevated. So we've already lost a third of brook trout habitat in the state, and the forecast is for the brook trout to be gone from northeast part of the country by the year 2100. That's the forecast.
We know that the National Wildlife Foundation National Wildlife Federation has long worked to engage children and families with nature and wildlife. Talk about why this is so important and some of your favorite places to engage nature in Pennsylvania.
You know, there's an old cliche that you can't love what you don't know. And, our kids are spending a lot more time indoors. When the temperature gets above 90 degrees, I've talked to Venture Outdoors here in Pittsburgh, and they say we have all kinds of cancellations. So this increased temperature is not only keeping our kids indoors, but they're spending way more time in front of the television and video games. And all the state fish and wildlife agencies all across the country, and everyone who's involved in natural resource protection, is very concerned about this issue. We're concerned that our kids are not spending enough time outdoors so they get to love it, like those of us who have spent our lives being engaged in the outdoors have come to know and love our outdoors. So I'm making an effort with my two sons. We have backpacked and fished and camped and skied and hunted all over Pennsylvania, all over our country, really. We've done a lot of backpacking. So I've passed that heritage on to them. And they're already spending time with my grandson, taking him on canoe trips and things like that. And my favorite trip in our country was that float trip down the Susquehanna River where we caught so many fish. And we haven't been back to the river since 2007. I'm not sure my grandson will be able to experience the same thrill of catching all these fish that we did for 25 years.
Yeah, and you think about other parts of the country. How many fewer smelt there are, for example, in Minnesota. For whatever reason, the smelt run isn't what it used to be. And it sounds like what you're saying is that the lack of engagement that young people have today for whatever reason, being tied to the computer, video games, that kind of thing, breeds indifference to what's out there. We're talking with Ed Perry, Pennsylvania Outreach Coordinator for the National Wildlife Federation, to get his reaction to the National Wildlife Federation's new report entitled Wildlife Legacy, Climate Change, and the Next Generation of Wildlife. While we're not going to solve climate change overnight, what are some steps, Ed, that we can take to make a difference, reaching out to our elected officials, for example?
Yeah, you know, the good thing is each of us can do something. If you have a truck that you drive as your primary vehicle 20,000 miles a year, you're putting 23,000 pounds of carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. But if you kind of use that truck only when you really do need it and drive a vehicle that gets 37 miles to the gallon, instead of putting out 23,000 pounds, you're putting out 10,000. So each of us can do some little thing. Don't use your dryer. Hang up your clothes. Insulate your water heater. Turn down that thermostat. Change your light bulbs from incandescent to an LED. By changing one incandescent light bulb, you don't burn 500 pounds of coal, and you reduce your electric bill by $30 over the life of that bill. So all the things we're talking about to solve climate change will save you money. But still, that's not going to be enough. And what we really need is for our elected representatives to get behind this and actually pass legislation that puts a levy on major sources of carbon pollution at the source. But since our elected officials don't seem to be interested in tackling climate change, the Obama administration's EPA is doing all it can to reduce carbon pollution. They've come up with a rule to reduce carbon pollution from cars and light trucks. They're going to require them to get an average of 54 miles to the gallon by the year 2025. They have a rule in place now for new power plants. And on June 2nd, they will unveil a new rule for existing power plants to greatly reduce carbon emissions. And just yesterday, Senator Casey made a very strong statement on this national climate assessment and said there's compelling evidence that we need to take action now to protect future generations of Pennsylvanians, because we are already seeing the effects of climate change here in Pennsylvania. So we greatly appreciate Senator Casey for stepping up and making that statement.
And in the last 30 seconds or so that we have, what would you say to those who refuse to believe that climate change is real? How do you paint a picture?
You know, you'd have to be in denial of your senses not to see the effects of all this wacky weather we've been having all across our country. 2 weeks ago, Pensacola and Ford had 26 inches of rain in 24 hours. Does that sound normal to you? Out west, it was literally on fire. In the last 50 years, there's only been three times when more than 9 million acres have burned, and they've all been in the last 6 years. Things are happening, and if you're paying attention, you know what's happening.
Ed Perry is Pennsylvania Outreach Coordinator for the National Wildlife Federation. Ed, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.